Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
You are listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. Now, you would know if you listen to the show that every other 6 months, we speak to a wide variety of CEOs of JSE listed companies who, according to the codes and ethics, of course, of the JSE and being a publicly owned and listed company, they do need to share disclosures on the financial results, the strategy of the business, and essentially interact with us as key stakeholders and shareholders in the company. But have you ever wondered, when it comes to certain CEOs, why do some get it right and others don't get it wrong? Why is it that some others come in to be the Mr. Fix-It of the day, and others, however, just see things fall apart and things come and go? We've seen it with various entities in South Africa, like Pick n Pay, like Tiger Brands, even African Bank at one point, and other audit firms like KPMG. And now we're also going to use Starbucks as a particular case study. Just over a year ago, Laxman Vaharashmi was the CEO of Starbucks. He was initially appointed as a former consultant at McKinsey, a company that typically consults and tells CEOs and other corporate companies how to run their business. He didn't last 18 months. And now Mr. Fix-It Brian Nicol is in the seat. He is a former executive at a company called Chipotle, well-known food outlet in the United States. But he too has come forward to say, you know what? We're trying to fix the business and get it back to its foundation and the fundamentals of who Starbucks was when they started. So tonight, using Starbucks as a case study, we're going to reflect on leadership lessons here. The cost of hiring the wrong CEO. To tell us more about this, we're joined by a good friend of the show, someone we always speak to, who might help me become CEO one day. I always say this when I talk to you. Andrew Woodburn, who joins us as the Managing Director of Amrop Woodburn Man. Such a pleasure to have you with us as always.
It's great to be here, Gugu, and with the listeners. And you're already CEO of your own show. So, you know, you've already shot the lights out. It's lovely to be here with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. Always exciting to speak to you. And, you know, as soon as I read this article, a friend had actually shared it as a message. And I was like, my goodness, this is an interesting case study because it just reveals yet again that we typically think, well, those who study businesses, consult on businesses, make amazing executives and don't mess up. But there's an interesting theme that's underlying here regarding Starbucks. Maybe talk us through some of your observations here.
Yeah, look, it's fascinating because the global brand, you know, we even have it here. Yeah. There's devotees around the world, right, who will pilgrimage their Starbucks store to get their fix. And you've got to sell a lot of coffee to pay the rent.
Exactly.
And, of course, they employed a new CEO, the previous one to the one they have now, who was a 22-year veteran of McKinsey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know McKinsey has the brightest guys and can talk a good game and so on. But the interesting thing with this one was he didn't last 17 months, as you said.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, if you look at the reason for the board exiting him, is primarily it was results. He just didn't deliver. I mean, the company went from $114 billion US dollar company down to a $70 billion
My goodness.
US dollar company, right? When the new guy came in, Mr. Fix-It came in, on the day one, the valuation went up $20 billion
Yep.
In one go. Jeez. Now, why was this such a good case study?
Hmm.
Is firstly, it's clear on two things where the errors were.
Mm-hmm.
The first was he didn't deliver the results. He did come in with some modernization thinking and some wonderful digitization of everything approach and so on. It didn't work. So his results were poor.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that there was even more damage to the environment. And by that, I mean the internals of Starbucks as well.
Exactly.
Right. And so one of the key lines of this chat you and I are having is, what is the cost of getting the talent acquisition wrong?
And aren't we seeing that now, right? Because the Mr. Fix-It is actually Brian Nicol, and he's already come out a year later to say, well, this is what I also got wrong, but this is also what we're fundamentally fixing. So it seems as though the errors of old are catching up with the entity. And even from a local example, the last time we spoke about EPSA and some of the leadership changes there. It too is a business that is trying to rejig and reorganize itself in terms of the new market to make it more competitive. Pick n Pay, Sean Summers has come in to be Mr. Fix-It. And again, another business that already is also trying to realign its the structure of its portfolio. So what is the cost of actually appointing the wrong CEO?
So why Starbucks was so visible globally was just the easy to calculate costs of those two changes they made,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, I just took some notes here. I mean, the total cost that they can tell us as the public was $130 million. I mean, you know, we're not even talking rands here, right? We're talking dollars. Of which acquiring Mr. Fixit cost them about $90 million.
Jeez.
And exiting the problem CEO was the rest. Mm-hmm. To pay him out for early exit and so on. And interestingly enough, you know, the way the media has it is that shareholders accepted that. Bearing in mind Mr. Fixit, who they put it was $90 million, but in the media now is at $113 million sign on. Right, that's to arrive from Chipotle. Right, that's not to do for the first day of work. It's just to arrive.
Mm.
Right, was worth it because they're $113 million of acquisition costs, and that's not the search fee. That's not my fee if I facilitated that placement. Resulted in a $20 billion uptick of the company's value in day one because they announced the exit of the previous guy and the arrival of the new guy. So the market liked that, and $20 billion up for the small price of $113 million,
right,
was probably a good multiplier if you're an investor.
Oh.
But what did they get wrong, and what are the real costs? It doesn't just finish at what the exiting CEO needs to be paid to leave. And we've seen that in the likes of Eskom's and other places where
yes.
contracts have to be paid out.
Mm-hmm.
And the arrival or onboarding fee of the new person. There are a lot of unquantifiable costs that are at play.
And from what we're observing, it almost seems as though these also have a lag effect, right? Just in terms of further investment that needs to go into the business, realigning the culture within the organization.
Well, you're starting to hit it, right?
Yeah.
There's no pill. I'd say to CEOs, there's no pill I can give you to help you with your culture that if you give it to all your staff, tomorrow they wake up and everybody's the same and they know exactly what working at XYZ company should look like.
Mm-hmm.
There's no pill to do that, right? Mm-hmm. It takes time. We're humans. The other line I like to use behind closed doors is people are not robots.
Yeah.
So you can ask for the unicorn and you might even think you found the unicorn, but when they arrive, because they're human, they actually aren't the robotic version of what you wrote on the paper.
Exactly.
Right? And by the way, I'm a big fan that we're going to need humans for quite a time to come because AI also has very little EQ at this point in time.
We are happy to hear that.
So we still need people. For those of you who worried that maybe AI is going to take all our jobs, right? We actually still need people.
Got you.
So here's the thing, is what takes time and is where is the real value, and it's almost impossible to quantify, is things like employee morale.
Mm-hmm.
So you were underneath the stewardship of the previous CEO. The results got worse and worse and worse. We don't really know because they've been quite tight-lipped about his leadership style and other things. And what that means is people get despondent because their bonuses are zero. If they've got shares, they're going down and they're not making money on the share price. Then it gets even worse that the existing management who will all report to the new CEO are wondering about their jobs. And can they actually be here? And do they want to be here? And how nice is this? And can I even be a winner? And so you begin to compound the problem.
Mm.
Then you get what I call the investment damage.
Yes.
That you had shareholders holding that $114 billion company share.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time it gets to $70 billion, so, you know, good 40%, goodbye, thank you very much. You have investors that say, I'm not going to be touching that share.
For a while. Yeah.
Right? Until I see the results get back to where they were.
Exactly.
And so if you quantify that and you can't add all that up, the damage is massive. Then you lose things like relationships, operational knowledge, enterprise understanding, track record of what we did before and what worked and what didn't work and so on. So getting your talent acquisition wrong is a massive, massive cost that can't even be quantified. My father, who's 84 now and started our business, used to say in South Africa, easy to hire, impossible to fire.
Ah.
So that's where that exit payment comes from, right? That at the end of the day, you end up taking pain to redress the error that you may have made on your own,
yeah,
bringing in the wrong person.
Exactly.
I was put about all this together and it's a perfect storm.
A perfect storm and many examples that we can allude to here locally and abroad. I was about to say then, clearly that's a heavy responsibility to hold on to as a board that's actually making that appointment and has to sift through these CVs and interviews and actually appoint the individual and take a unanimous decision in that regard or a large majority. But also for individuals like yourself in the space that you're in, where you're actually headhunting individuals to say, hold on, you see, appear to have the capacity to lead a company of this nature. And yet you can only really see the proof in the pudding once they're in it. So are we finding that there are interesting ways of balancing that dynamic these days? Has it become a lot more competitive or easier to funnel through, what do they call it? The chef in the way? The wheat?
Yeah, there is. Or, you want to call them the competitive candidates compared to the winning candidate,
yes.
Right? And then, as you said, the proof's in the pudding later. So yes, boards, I think, in South Africa have got to a point where they're understanding the first key lesson from our case study tonight at Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
Results, in most cases, at this point in our economy, are everything.
Yes.
Because the investor base, which includes you and my pension funds,
yeah.
By the way, the Government Workforce Pension Fund, the Eskom Pension and Provident Fund, and so on, right at this point in a depressed economy, you talked about TFG's results being
yes.
down, right? The consumer is cash-strapped.
Mm-hmm.
None of us have that extra money in our pocket, and help us, Christmas is coming,
mm-hmm.
right? And so what's starting to happen is the representatives of the investment community are looking at the investment counters and are saying, through various leverage ability, mm-hmm. your results and your return on our investment in your share is mission critical. Because we have to pay pensioners and other investors their return. So the board now is really and truly understanding through the 30 years of our new democracy that, in fact, there's many agendas in the boardroom.
Yeah.
There's transformation. There's this ESG thing that's
yeah.
come in the last 20 years. There is corporate citizenship. There is corporate investment. There is corporate CSR. There's all of these things you've got to get right.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, people are in business and people are investing for one critical thing, and that is the results.
Exactly.
Simple.
To make money.
So when you get down to that level of simplicity, the board is now starting to understand that when they appoint senior executives, and it's not only the CEO, they're the leader or the driver of the bus, but your CFO is also a fiduciary director, and in many cases some other members of Exco are also looked
sure.
at by the nominations committee, that we better appoint people who can deliver.
Yep.
And I want to use Chart Kruger as a great example at Tiger, because he came on under, I think it was a 2-year contract, I stand under correction, and they've now extended it because he was delivering.
Right.
But he's no spring chicken, bless you, Chart. He's not 41 anymore. So he is bringing Tiger back to the basics. He's delivering, and the board recognizes that and have extended his tenure. So there's a great case study of a positive appointment with the results showing that he is delivering against his mandate, and hence he's been extended.
Exactly.
So on the Starbucks case, we've learned about where all these costs are. Now, how do I carry that responsibility, and how do board members carry that responsibility? Often board members are there for 9 years, and so you don't just appoint a CEO and then leave the board.
Mm.
You're going to live with your decision.
Mm.
And that is hugely, I'm a big fan of the accountability of making the decision. At the end of the day, as a facilitator of talent, it's my job to line up the best of the competitive set
mm-hmm.
who are both relevant and interested in the opportunity, because you can never force somebody to come to an opportunity if they're not interested.
Exactly.
So they both have to be relevant to the opportunity and interested. And then to facilitate a process where the board can review, compare this talent, inclusive of internal candidates,
mm-hmm.
and then it is the client's mandate and responsibility to make the final decision.
Gotcha.
So I'm merely an advisor, but they own the decision, right? It's a little bit like the chicken and the pig and their commitment to breakfast.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So the board does live with a good or a poor appointment and have to take it on the chin, however that turns out. But,
uh-huh.
but here's the rub of the matter. It depends on the quality and depth of the facilitation of the process.
Gotcha.
And there are competitors in my industry who have cut prices, will do a quick and dirty because they want to make a commission or whatever it might be and take shortcuts. And we, you and I have discussed this because I've had a conversation with you before about CV fraud.
Yes, yes.
And that whoever did those roles didn't even bother to check that the individual actually had that
particular qualification
or not. And we're not even at referencing, fact-checking, and so on. And where we find ourselves now, next lesson from the Starbucks case study, is that an individual of this nature, 22 years in McKinsey, can sell ice to Eskimos for sure. And so in the interview process can talk a hell of a good game.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately for him, in his entire life, had never built a business, had never run the P&L, had never made the appropriate investments, and had never led the people to take Starbucks to where he promised he could.
My goodness.
And we have the same problem in our company, in our country right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have some people who can talk
a
very good game. But when it comes to the delivery, are a little bit short on the pants.
Mm.
When the tide goes out, remember the emperor and their clothes?
Yep.
When the tide comes out,
exactly.
You see who's wearing trunks or not.
Exactly.
Right? And so that's the key, and that's where my industry must play a critical role. But I'll say to our clients, that's what you pay for.
Mm.
And it's not cheap, and it can't be done fast.
Got you. It's not cheap and it can't be done fast. I think the going fast is such an important aspect for us to also bear in mind. There's so many other themes that I want to talk about because, of course, reward plays a significant role there. Maybe let's also, you know, rope that in into the concluding remarks that not only do these, the cost of making a bad appointment as CEO, you know, have its own large sunk costs, but also these fundamental costs that do sneak in into various aspects of the business going forward. But then again, it raises the same question about making the right appointment for the right cost, knowing that we're competing globally for talent. Is that still something that's unique to South Africa? Or
no, that's a thing. Our executives, Roy Bagatini came from Levi's in the US to come and be CEO of Woolworths here. And you can make no error that his salary in dollars was looked at as part of the acquisition process. So REM is an issue, but I'm a big fan that CEOs live or die. And Koos Becker at Naspers was a famous example of this, where he lived or died by the share price and the long-term future of the company.
Yes.
And his short-term payouts or salary, as you and I would know, were of lesser importance compared to the growth of the share that he facilitated as CEO.
Exactly.
And therefore, you live or die by the responsibility you are given and the consequence thereof.
The pressure. As you said that, looking in my eyes. Jeez, Andrew, I feel it already. We'll leave it there for today, but always such a pleasure speaking to you. There's so many more themes that we will certainly cover in the weeks to come. Let's see how Kenny Fihla does a few more months into a full year into the role, and hopefully we'll have him here and also have you here to share your observations so far.
Thanks, Google.
Always a pleasure. That's Andrew Woodburn joining us this evening, the Managing Director of AMROP Woodburn Man, helping us unpack and use the Starbucks leadership analysis as a case study to fully understand what is the true cost of making the wrong leadership appointment in a business.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.